Hi, Dan.
Oh, hi, Jason.
Oh, no. Dan, what have you done with Dan? Did you give Dan the flu? Stephen Hackett?
I have filled in for you before, and I think that's exactly the joke we used last time.
Yeah. Well, I mean, when the show starts with hi, Dan, and there's no Dan, it is awkward. But
hi, Bob.
Hi, Stephen Hackett.
Hey, Jason Snell.
Not a lot going on this week, other than Apple's results, the iPad turning 10. People got, there was a new app release that was subscription that people were angry about. Mm-hmm. Neil Young said crazy things about music. And I'm going to post the Apple report card to Six Colors in a couple hours. So, you know, a week.
I was just scrolling through your website. I was like, there's a lot of stuff this week. This was a busy week.
This was a busy week. I would prefer to spread the stuff out. I had a couple weeks where I'm like, oh, what am I going to do today? And then this week happened.
That's like, how February will be, I'm sure. Just like twiddling our thumbs.
Yeah, but so anything leap out at you? I mean, iPad 10 is not news, right? Counting like when there was news a long time ago is not itself, I think, news. But it
speak
did,
for yourself, buddy. I put the whole career on it.
Well, news, it's history more than it's news is what I'm saying. Like this just in. The sun is, the earth has reached the point around the sun where a thing happened a while ago. That's not news.
There's a little marker in space.
Let's talk about space some more, Stephen. You and I, wait a second. That's a different podcast that
different show.
We also did this week because it was a really, really busy week. But like the iPad, I don't know. I mean, it's certainly the iPad anniversary engendered a lot of kind of back and forth on blogs and Twitter and stuff where John Gruber, who, by the way, he wrote a lot of that iPad stuff in the report card thing he sent in, and I was like, oh, he beat me to getting his criticism, but he gets to put it all in Daring Fireball, and that's a good way to do it. But like John used the opportunity of the iPad's birthday to say, hey, the iPad, it's not as good as it should be.
Yeah, so you are much more of an iPad person than I am. Do you feel like his criticism of the multitasking stuff is valid?
Yeah, you know, I do to a certain point. Like, I mean, some of it, like, he's like, I wish you could just turn it off. You could totally turn it off. And somebody finally was like, John, there's a multitasking switch. You can turn it off. And he's like, aha, that's proof that it's bad, is that they even know it's so bad that you can turn it off. His complaint is about discoverability, and it's complicated, right? Because there are a lot of things that computer people take for granted that are not actually discoverable. If you've ever been with a parent or, anybody you know who is not super into computers and you've seen them try to use their computer, you have one of those moments, or at least I've had them, and I know other people have had them, where they're like, what are you doing? Do you not know that you can do this? Do you not know? And the answer is they don't know because it's not discoverable. So discoverability concerns are not limited to the iPad. I don't think Gruber is doing a lot of like, I wish you could just have more things that you could see and you could tap on. It's like, I agree that having things you can see and tap on is the most discoverable, and that Apple on the iPad is probably relying too much on like obscure finger gestures. But at the same time, if you put stuff on the screen, people are going to click on them. And if you don't want them to click on them, then don't put them there, right? So I think there's that aspect of it, too, which is like, oh, you know, I think Apple doesn't really want multitasking to be something that is commonly used. It's for it's for power users. It's like a pro feature. And I do wonder about, like, the philosophy of this, of like, who's it for? Because an iPad Pro is not the same as the base model iPad, and the use cases are so wide ranging that you want to provide those powerful features. And people like me, I mean, and Federico, and there are lots of people who really want those features, but you don't necessarily want those on the iPad Mini that a 7-year-old is using. So I think that's the challenge. The multitasking is weird, and it's not right. Like, they're trying, but they haven't gotten it right, and that's what will be frustrating if they don't take another crack at it this year, because if they keep not getting it right and moving it incrementally and doing it every other year, we're going to be here forever. So I think that there's, I mean, what I said on Twitter, people are like, oh, you guys should get on the talk show together and argue about the iPad. It's like, nobody knows the pain of the limitations of the iPad more than somebody who uses the iPad all the time,
right?
And that's
it's interesting because I mean, I was thinking about, okay, well, if multitasking is bad on the iPad or frustrating or not discoverable, like, what makes it as discoverable as it is on the Mac and the PC, right? And the thing I come back to is like, is it input devices? Like, does it boil down to something that simple where if you have to rely on a bunch of gestures, then it's tricky to learn. And if you just point your cursor at something and it happens, like, it feels like there's more to it than that, but I can't help but think that input device is a big sort of stumbling block here.
Yeah. And I think window layering is a fundamentally discoverable multitasking interface. Like, even on the Mac, if you put stuff in different places in Exposé or different full screens, it's really easy to just lose track of where they are. And like, you can only get to the other one if you click on a certain thing or you swipe in a certain way. Whereas, like, I'm looking at my Mac right now. I got a Skype window, I got a Slack window, I got a Finder window, I got a Safari window. And I can see them all. And if I touch virtually, you know, with my cursor, if I touch any of them, they're in the foreground. And then I can move them around to where I want. I can make them full screen. I can do whatever I want with them. And, you know, I think that's fundamentally the problem with the iPad is it's not in your face that there are other things. And the tile, like Mike and I had this conversation about you know, he doesn't want Windows on the iPad, but he thought some sort of tiling system, kind of like what we've got, would be a better approach. And it's cleaner, and floating Windows on a screen is super messy. I mean, 27-inch 5K iMac, right? I got a lot of space for garbage to float around on my screen. And sometimes it does, and it really bothers me. But it does have the advantage of having it be like kind of a control center. So I don't know how you would do that. The first thing that I start to think of is something almost like a Windows XP kind of like strip somewhere, like a control strip that sort of shows you what else you have to toggle between them instead of, you know, and maybe that would be a dock-like feature. I don't know. But like, I don't think I want all my apps and floating Windows on my iPad because that seems messy too. But boy, it does make it easier to know what you're running and what's available. And this is hard, right? Like, Apple, we come and go talking about this topic. There are people at Apple who spend their entire job trying to figure out the right way to do this, and they are having a hard time. So I get how hard this problem is, but it's definitely a problem.
The dock is a really interesting point because on the Mac, you have the affordance of indicators of, hey, this thing is open, it has windows somewhere, and you know, if you click on it, those windows come to the foreground. Or if you're John Syracuse and you do some sort of, you know, magic app that changes how the foregrounding works. Mm-hmm. But the iPad doesn't have those affordances, right? It is, to John's point, it is up to the user to sort of figure out what's going on.
Yeah.
And the thing that encourages me in all this is that Apple has really changed the multitasking. Like, do you remember when it first showed up, it was that rail on the right-hand side and you had to like pick the app icon?
Yeah.
And there was like no sorting to that made any human sense, and mm-hmm. and how far it's come. And so I think they will be willing to continue to tinker with this and change it over time because they've been willing to do that in the past.
Yeah. Yeah. I hope so. It is, you know, and I mean, Gruber's larger grumpiness, I think, is that it's not just that they get it wrong, but that it has the idea that it's right has led to assumptions that are also probably wrong. So, like, as excited as I got about multitasking and drag and drop in iPadOS, I almost never use it. I do use it sometimes, but I almost never use it. And I think they go hand in hand. Like, and let's throw in the multi-window thing, too, because multi-windowing, while brilliant, is also super weird. And I think the reason it's super weird is because it exposes just how weird the tiled multitasking is. Because mm-hmm. these are features that I like and I do use very specifically sometimes, right? Where I was like, I need two windows open now. But on the Mac, I don't think twice about opening two windows. And on the iPad, I like have to go through like a checklist. It's like before firing a nuclear missile. Like, do we all agree that we're going to open a second window in this app now? Because things are going to get weird. It's like,
right.
Okay, yes, check. I agree. Let's do it. Let's break open the seal, get the code, open a second window. And first off, that shouldn't be how it is. And second, I do think maybe I do it accidentally more than I do it purposefully, which is not, that's bad on like multiple levels. So I wish I could come up with a suggestion of a better metaphor here. I appreciate that it's hard. It just doesn't seem that they've cracked it yet. And for me, the issues, like John's frustration, like the iPad isn't as good as it should be. It's totally right. John says that it's because Steve Jobs was really pushing it, and then when he died, it kind of got it didn't have a champion. I believe that it's, and Mike and I talked about this on Upgrade a couple weeks ago, I believe it's because the iPhone just took off and everybody's like, whoa, oh my God, the iPhone is now going to be 60-70% of our business. We have to put all of our effort into the iPhone, and the iPad has to just kind of lay there for a while.
Yeah.
And so it has, and that's the frustrating part, is that are they going to spend more time really doing it now that they've named it iPad OS? Are they going to really give it the time that it deserves? Because it's clearly not solved, and it's frustrating that it's taken them this long to get to where they are. And do we have hope that they're going to finally put, now that the iPhone is important but kind of stable, will they really kind of drive into giving the iPad its due? I don't know.
Maybe if they turn multitasking into a service, that's a good idea.
It's a window that could display anything you want. It could news, TV shows. Yeah.
Multitasking Plus for $4.99 a month.
You know, the multitasking thing I use the most is picture-in-picture, which I love. I love, love, love.
I do, too.
And I use that on the Mac now, too, and I love it on the Mac, too. That's really cool. There, I have those moments with the iPad where I'm like, I'm in split screen and I got a window playing video, like a baseball game or something like that. And I'm like, oh my God, I'm in the future now. But, you know, mostly it's just I have a window open. And that's, and like, there's an app that does nothing but sit in your split screen to force the other app to be smaller.
Mm-hmm.
Because the Twitter app is really bad in widescreen on the iPad.
Yeah.
It's like, yep. That's dumb. That's dumb.
But it is dumb.
That's where we are. That's what we've been.
It's dumb, but you know, connected, my podcast connected is responsible for that whole industry.
I know.
We complained about it.
Thank you. Well, I mean, you put the pieces together. Twitter for iPad is really bad, but it's good when it's in the split view. I don't want it to run it with anything else in split view. How about I just stick a thing over there that is like a piece of wood, like propping a door open.
That's right. That's exactly what it is.
That's what it is. Okay. Like, yeah, okay. There should be something else. Like Twitterific does multi-window now, and I rarely use it. And I think that says something about the way Apple has implemented multi-window too, where it's like they want everybody to use it, but the way Apple has done it is it's instantiating it's actually like multi-version of an app kind of running. And, you know, it's up to the app developers, but like I end up not doing that because managing the two windows thing is more trouble than it's worth, even though I would probably prefer to have a couple of columns in Twitterific. The solution is to run it in multi-window, and then everything else gets weird once that happens, like in terms of switching and stuff like that. So I don't know. I mean, it all comes back to that same thing we've been talking about since last year when they named iPad OS, right? Which is, okay, you gave it a name. Does this mean you're committing to actually doing things on the iPad every year? Because you haven't up to now. And we won't know until June when WWDC happens. And we'll find out if iPad OS is more than just a marketing name and is actually a commitment.
Can we talk about the report card?
Yeah, let's do it. It's in movable type. I was going to call it the CMS, but let's be honest. It's in movable type. It's ready to go. I gave my panelists like 12 hours or 15 hours to look at it and make sure that I didn't misquote them, or which would be hard because I copied and pasted, or if there are things they regretted that they wanted to change and all of that. Mm-hmm. But it's just about ready to go out. What would you like to know?
I can publicly say that I made a grave error while filling it out, that I accidentally checked the box saying that you couldn't name me.
Yeah.
And you were like, what's going on? Did you want to be named? And then I realized my mistake. And
yeah,
I'd like to apologize again for that.
I'm glad that I checked with you, because I decided that I wasn't going to cure. I had so many quotes. I have 30,000 words of text from people who took the survey. From the 65 people who took the survey. 30,000 words. And I struggled. I think I talked about this on the Secret Podcast last week. I struggled with figuring out how to curate that, and I ended up, the right answer was make a PDF and then just use, sit somewhere and read it with Apple Pencil, and because I didn't want to print it out, but sit somewhere with Apple Pencil and like highlight it. And then I literally just had my iPad with the highlight, or actually I saved out the PDF, had it next to me on my Mac next to the text editor, and I just went and like I cut out everything but the highlights. Mm-hmm. and then I had to piece it all together. So halfway through the read, I was like, Steven, did you really check this box? And you're like, oh no, I didn't mean that. And yeah, then I'm like, all sorry. Right, well then I'll put your quotes in there. But so it was, yeah, 30,000 words down to about 7,000 words. And then from that, I, you know, as I assembled it, I cut it even more to be whatever the word count of the story is now, which I guess I could open up in BB Edit and tell you what it is. But it's, you know, it's a big story. There's lots of words, most of which were not written by me.
Were there
37,000? No, that can't be right. No, that's the original. It's 6,000. 6,000.
Okay, I was going to say, I've read it. Did it seem like 37,000
characters? Thank you, BB Edit, but it's 6,000 words.
Yeah. Were there any big surprises that you're willing to share in there?
Well, if people, subscribers have done the newsletter, which went out yesterday, they've seen the top line stuff. But like software quality just took a nosedive. That's the big one. Software quality just, it died. And the really funny graph is software quality over time. Did you see that one? It's literally a TikTok of software quality. Yep. Where
it really surprised me.
Apple releases a cleanup version that doesn't have bugs, and everybody's like, software quality is great. And then the next year they release an ambitious version with lots of bugs, and software quality goes down almost a point. And then the next year they're like, we're sorry, take us back, we're gonna be good. And then it goes back up. And then the next year they're like, iOS 13, it's really bad. And then it goes back down. It's like, it's literally the last 4 years have been up down on the survey. So there it is, there's the TikTok approach, which is why a lot of the people in the panel were like, Apple, you can't keep doing it like this. You can't have these awful years. You gotta fix whatever your problem is, and maybe back off on feeling like you've got to ship stuff in the fall when it's not ready.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it surprised me because I think we all have really short memories for this sort of stuff. And then like looking at that and then mapping it in my head to, that's iOS 13, that's iOS 12, that's High Sierra, that's Mojave, is like, oh, this is totally a thing, and yeah. I just hadn't thought about it in those terms, really.
I wrote a thing that was like, oh, I haven't seen a drop like this before, and then I looked, I'm like, oh my god, I've seen this exact same drop in this category before, because in 16, it was 3.4, 17, it was 2.7, 18, it was 3.4, 19, 2.7. It literally mm-hmm. did the same thing. So whatever Apple is doing on this on and off bugs and then apology thing, the message from people in 2019 was stop this, I want to get off. So we'll see what happens, but like, this is not, it's easy to forget, but like 2 years ago we were in the same place, frustrated by the software quality from Apple, and then Apple spent a year repairing that and then mm-hmm. undercut it. So we're back here.
Yeah, and this is the first year you're making a change to the Apple Watch and wearables section.
Yeah, I decided, so something I learned, actually, IDG always used to do this employee survey that we all kind of, we did, but we all made fun of it, and like managers were really leaning on, like everybody needs to do it. And it was this long survey, and one of the things that frustrated us was that a lot of the questions didn't make sense, or we felt that they weren't quite right. And I would get this feedback every year, and every year I would take it back to HR, and they would say, we can't change the survey. And the reason they say that is because the survey has historical trends. Like, if you change what you ask, you can't compare it to previous years. And so every change was weighed very carefully, and they would keep questions around for a long time because they'd want the higher-ups at that point, and Pat McGovern probably, wanted to see a 10-year trend. Not just a 2-year trend, but a 10-year trend. So I've been able to accumulate a 5-year trend on these categories, which is great. It's actually really interesting, and I, you know, that's one of the nice things about continuing to do it. But I formed these questions in 2015, and or I guess late 2014, and Yeah, it's well, it was 15, 16, 17, 18, 19. So yeah, in 2015.
Okay.
And it was a different time. Like, environmental slash social, this weird category that goes, what I describe it as is it's like an empty vessel that people pour whatever their kind of feelings about Apple in the broader world context into.
Right.
From
year
to year.
Yeah, definitely.
That category exists largely because of all the stories about poor working conditions in Apple's factories in China.
Wow. That feels like a long time ago.
Right. But like then it became about Apple's green energy practices, and then it became about Apple's diversity and inclusion practices, and then it became about accessibility support. And this year it's about Donald Trump visiting Tim Apple in Texas and Apple pulling that Hong Kong app that was used by protesters.
Right. Yeah, the president built my computer when he was there, I think.
Yeah, it just takes a hammer. Steven, mm-hmm. That's all it takes. so that category changes, but the wording doesn't change. It's just the category is what people want. But the problem was I also did an Apple Watch category. And Apple has now made this big deal in the last year of wearables as a concept. And their other revenue category is now wearables and accessories and whatever. And it is the conversation around that category is not just Apple Watch, but it's like AirPods. And there may be other wearables in the future. And so I thought, I have nowhere to capture that. I have nowhere to capture wearables. And I'm capturing Apple Watch, which is not the same. So what I did was I continued to ask the Apple Watch question, but I also asked a wearables question. So they go together, and then next year I'll at least be able to do a, you know, versus last year for wearables as a concept. And my guess, my plan long term would be that the Apple Watch thing will eventually just drop off and I'll show the wearables question data. But for now, so that's me kind of prepping for the future more than anything else. And by the way, wearables got an A+, so nowhere to go but down. Wearables 4.6, the median score was a 5. Like, everybody was like, wearables are great. Apple Watch was also a pretty good score, got an A-. It was the second highest rated score at 4.1, but you throw in other wearable tech and the AirPods, which everybody loves, and boom, it's huge. So that's why I did it.
No, I think it's good for this to change over time as Apple moves their categories around and new products come out.
Yeah, that's,
I think it's smart.
That's the push and pull, right? Is I want it to be consistent, but I also don't want to have a category become irrelevant. As somebody who took that employee survey, it was really frustrating. Like, yeah, this isn't relevant anymore. I know why you're still asking it, but it's not relevant anymore. Mm-hmm. I don't want to do that. So I'm trying to get ahead of the game with wearables. And I already had services on the list, so that was pretty good. The snoozers, and you know, you were among those who made comments on some of these things. It's like Apple TV and HomeKit. Like, it's hilarious. These are people who focus on this tech, on Apple tech and tech in general. And you ask them about Apple TV and HomeKit, and they're like, eh. Like, they have no... It's the... damning with faint praise or damning with faint damnation. It's like sometimes being angry about a missed opportunity is way more optimistic, where it's like, mm-hmm. You could turn this around. What are you doing? Fix this. And then there are the categories where they're like, I don't care. They don't care. Does anyone care? And that's tough. And like Apple TV and HomeKit are both in that kind of nether sphere, that limbo where it's like they nobody really is super enthusiastic about what Apple's doing or about the category in general. I don't know. They're weird ones.
Yeah. It's hard to get excited about those things. And I have a house full of HomeKit stuff, right? Like,
yeah.
and it works, but then you go to look at something new, like the HomeKit Secure video, and it was a real train wreck for me.
Or yes.
You look at the Apple
That's
TV and like, on one hand, like, yeah, the Apple TV 4K is like a pretty solid device, but on the other hand, maybe no one needs it as TV, Apple TV becomes a service on other televisions. Like, it's just very hard to see where it should go. And for me, at least, because they're so secondary, like, I'm not a huge Apple TV user. Like, our friend Merlin probably uses it more than anybody on the planet. You know, he is much more invested in it than a lot of us are. And it's just kind of hard to get worked up about it when there's other stuff going on. When it mostly works the way it's supposed to, even if it's not super exciting.
Yeah, you know, I do wonder if the perception of what Apple TV is will change over time, and this category will become more about, like, the fact that they've got the TV, less about the box and more about the service and about the app on other platforms, and like Apple being pervasive on all boxes and TVs with their TV app. Mm-hmm. And people might say, oh, their strategy is being executed. They've got a growing service and they've got the app on all these things. But for this one anyway, I think most people were looking at it through the lens of, wow, that remote sucks. And they haven't updated the box in a couple of years. And it, you know, and it's way too expensive compared to the competition. And they have an app on the competition. So what are we even doing here? And like, I think that's a valid critique, but I think it may also be a function of Apple changing strategy. And they haven't, you know, the way people think of Apple TV as a category is still kind of mired in how is this box? How is the black box doing? And HomeKit, Josh Centers had a note of optimism that I quoted in the story at the end, which is like that alliance thing that got announced in December. Like his point was, I'm really optimistic about this because it suggests that we're going to exit the world where Apple is trying to do its own thing. And go into a world where HomeKit and the Apple Home app and all of that is just a, you know, a connection point for the all of the smart home tech that exists in the world that's going to be compatible. And like we can forget about this more, you know, difficult to navigate world that we've been living in the last few years, which is great. I mean, like I love HomeKit stuff. But I also am running a Homebridge server to integrate all my other stuff.
Right.
And that's not a real option for regular human beings. Right. So,
no.
So that's the thing is I can hack it to work, but that if that, and even then I'm not quite sure I understand what's going on. Like I've set up this thing to turn on my dehumidifier in my bedroom when the temperature sensor is in a certain range and I've got it all set up and sometimes it works, sometimes it doesn't. I have no idea why, and I have no way to debug it, and it's just, all right, that's just what it is. So, it's HomeKit. Forget it. It's HomeKit.
Oh, yeah. HomeKit. Oh, Apple TV.
Yeah, well, you know, they're... Anyway, so the overall for the report card, I think the thing that I find most interesting about it is... it is a survey of sentiment of people who write and talk and think about Apple. And so what it's trying to quantify is sort of what the sense in the room is, what the vibe is. And if you've been consuming a lot of podcasts and reading a lot of articles over the year, it shouldn't come as a surprise to you. It should more be putting down someplace where you can refer to it later what people felt in 2019 about Apple. Because these are in large part the people who are helping form your take on what Apple is doing. So, you know, they're not, if you've been listening to them, which you probably have been, then you've already heard this, essentially. But it does get it. I like that it gets it down and it gives you a place to refer to it and say, you know, it wasn't just these individual podcasts and this website and this blog and this pundit on Twitter who said that this was bad. It's like, look, everybody pretty much says this was bad or good or whatever. I find that valuable. I don't know, you know, I am a compiler, so I am watching it from the inside. When you were reading through it, you know, what do you get out of it reading through it from the other side, having not seen it?
Yeah, I mean, I think what you said, that it is a sort of a flag in the ground at a point in time. And I think every year it's done a really good job of that. Of like, okay, yeah, this... Like if I went back and read 2 years ago, I think I would be transported back to how everyone felt 2 years ago. I think the sort of the biggest takeaway for me though is just the difference in how people think about Apple's hardware and software. And if you sort of zoom out a little bit, like most of the hardware does pretty well consistently, right? Take the MacBook keyboard. Just put that aside for a second. Other than the MacBook keyboard, which is a giant problem, like iPhone hardware, iPad hardware, other Mac hardware, people are pretty happy with that, and Apple does a good job of that. And where
so,
they
so many of the survey responses were, I would give this a 5 out of 5, except for the fact that they're still selling computers with butterfly keyboards. Like, I had like 8 people say the same thing, which is generally like, yeah, Apple is winning on that front, except.
And they've got to, I mean, I think I said, like, it's got to, this story cannot keep going. It has to end this year.
It does.
But it's interesting that for the company that says, hey, you know, we are special because we sell things that integrate hardware, software, and services, and it's all sort of mumbled together, and it's kind of hard to, you know, draw the line between them. Like, their software is dragging them down.
Yeah.
And I don't know how to fix that. I'm not, you know, some sort of super developer, you know, manager type person, but clearly it's an issue, and it's an issue really interestingly across the platforms. Yes, iOS 13 was really bad at the launch, but you know, it's in macOS, it's in tvOS, it's in watchOS. Like, totally. There are these sort of systemic software issues that are sort of souring people on the overall Apple experience, and like that, they have got to get a handle on that, because it is what makes them special. It is what makes Apple unique, is that they do control the whole thing. And I feel like the software organization or the software platforms are letting down the hardware, and that's not a good position to be in.
Yeah, what Paul Kafasa said was, I wish they'd slow down the pace. But what James Thompson said was, something failed significantly in Apple's software engineering process this year, and I hope lessons have been learned, which is really all we can say from the outside. And it's more than this year, but I think that this is a good example. Casey List said, if I were on the engineering team, I'd want to pump the brakes. And Dr. Drang said something really interesting, which I agree with, actually. As an outsider looking in, it seems like this is true. I keep thinking Apple has overlearned the lesson of the mythical man month and refuses to hire enough programmers to keep up with the demands of its enormous software base. From the outside, it looks as if Apple software team keeps running from fire to fire, an understaffed group barely able to take a breath between crises. And I've said that on Upgrade a couple of times, which is, I think Apple's still hiring like the company it was. I did that chart. You know, I'm going to do some funnier charts in the future, Stephen, I promise. You gave me some ideas for some funny charts, but
looking forward to those.
Apple's business is like 6 times or whatever the size of it 10 years ago. And it has gone from being the Mac company with a little bit of iPod to being the manager of all of these different platforms. And I don't think they hire like that company. I think they hire like the old company where it was a Steve Jobs, you know, fight. Even if we have lots of money, I think Steve Jobs, having been around a billionaire founder before, you don't get to be a billionaire founder by spending money like a drunken sailor. And I think Steve Jobs's philosophy was like, you got to fight to work at Apple. I only want the top people. I only want like A players, maybe B players. But even then we're eroding our quality. We're special. We're the big leagues. We have to hire the very, very, very best, and they have to, and then we keep them forever, and they want to stay here because we're Apple. And I'm not going to, you know, you're going to fight me to fund a position for you, which is a way to build what was so magical about Apple in the early 2000s, I would say, which is a lean, focused team. The problem is, like Dr. Drang said, this is an enormous software base, and they're running from fire to fire. And I know that the Valley is a competitive environment, although I would also say Apple's hiring practices, where they have been reluctant to bring in core engineers they're reluctant to bring anyone in who isn't going to work in Cupertino.
Right.
And that's not, you know, they've changed there a little bit too, but like the truth is, do you know how much money it costs to live in the South Bay? And the impact, like it costs a fortune, and people don't want to live there because the cost of living is so high, and they've got families, and throw all that in the bin. I think Dr. Drang is ultimately correct that Apple's software problems can be at least, I think, in part explained by the fact that they don't have enough hands on deck. And I get that they don't want to hire bad people, but I think culturally that's not what's going on. Because I've talked to people who have been hired by, or have talked to Apple about being hired by them, And the process is endless. It's like they'll approach you and then they'll go away and then they'll have you talk to somebody and then they go away again. And then maybe they come back and you think that they're done and they've got moved on and then they come back to you. And like, I don't know if you've talked to people like this, but I've definitely talked to people who have gotten hired by Apple where it took months and months and months.
Mm-hmm.
And what are you doing? Like that's got to change, because that is how you lose talented people that you could have on your team. Plus, you should let them work remotely.
It is it's a problem, and I think you're right in that Apple still views itself as a much smaller company. Mm-hmm. There was that story several years ago now about like the functional organization and horizontal versus vertical.
Yeah,
and
we run it like a startup, guys. You are not a startup.
No, you're one of the
you're
largest.
A giant.
Yeah,
you're the
one
man.
Of the largest companies
Stop
in the world.
Stop pretending you're not the man. You're the man. You're IBM. I know you don't want to be IBM. You're IBM. You're a giant. You need mm-hmm. to act like a giant. At least in terms, you need to hire like a giant. You need to actually have staff to do what you need to do. Because that's the embarrassing thing is Apple's ambition. I think you would agree with this. Apple's ambition is clear. Like they want to strike out in new areas. They want to do things nobody else has done before. They want to be really ambitious. The challenge is that they seem to be unable to maintain many, if not all, of their ambitious projects over time because they got to move on to the next ambitious thing. That's bad. That's a bad sign. But I see it all the time from Apple.
Yeah.
I mean, HomeKit Secure Video. Yeah. What?
I got so many notifications, Jason. My phone would not stop vibrating. Yeah. It was ridiculous.
Yeah. Yeah. I bought a camera to try that out, and then I heard your thing, and I was like, I'm not, just going to put it in non-HomeKit mode. Use it like
just
that.
Just going to take
Logi,
a break.
The Logi Circle. It's a nice camera. I like it better than my Arlo's that I've got. It's really nice, and the software is really nice, but I'm not going to HomeKit that thing. That's not going to happen. Not going to happen. Well, Stephen, thank you so much for sitting in for Dan.
Yeah, anytime. Thanks for having me. And Dan, we hope you feel better soon.
Get well soon. Yeah, we did a comparable 500 earlier this week. We recorded the episode and that ran long and Dan was up late. And the next morning he woke up and was horribly sick. So I feel like I got Dan sick. So sorry.
Oh, no. That's a harsh work environment you run over at the Incomparable.
Yeah. Poor Dan. All right. Thank you to everybody out there for listening to the Six Colors Podcast. We appreciate it. And until next time, I'm going to do it right. I'm going to do it right. Bye, Stephen.
Bye, Jason.
Goodbye, Dan, wherever you are.
Bye, Dan.